Previously on the Skip and Josh podcast.
The only thing I remember from that show is as we were sitting in traffic on the way down, again, it was a really hot day and everyone had their windows rolled down and their sunroofs open. The car in front of us, there was a girl in the car in front of us. She stood up through the sunroof of her car and flashed us. It was great.
I have no recollection of that, Josh. I swear.
The Skip and Josh podcast is on now.
Hello.
Hey, Skip. How are you?
Great. What's happening?
You know, same old stuff. It's a weekend. I'm relaxed and ready to record another podcast. How's things with you?
Great. Great. I mean, it's like fall's coming, winter's coming, like the Game of Thrones, you know, fall's here, winter's coming, I feel. But, you know, I'd like to just wish you a happy Podiversary. This is like the first episode of our year two.
That's right. I completely forgot. Thank you very much. And happy Podiversary to you as well.
So, you know, we were recently guests on the Semi-Intellectual Musings podcast with Matt Sanderson and Phil Primo. And, you know, they kind of referred to us a little bit as an old married couple. And so, like, just like a traditional old married couple, like, you didn't remember our anniversary. So thanks.
Right. And actually, it was a great experience being on their show. What I forgot to mention when I was on the show is when I talk to you about them, I refer to them as the smart guys.
Yeah. Yeah. You said to me, when are we recording with those smart guys? Right. So, I mean, we had such a great time on their show just talking about the Tragically Hip. It was like, honestly, I had such a blast talking with them. So we decided to do like a little bit of a crossover and have them on our show. And dig into some more or less sports and politics where our kind of shows kind of intersect. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Matt Sanderson and Phil Primo from the Semi-Intellectual Musings podcast. Hey, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us on.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great, great. I mean, we had such a great time talking about the Hip. I mean, it was so amazing. Honestly, like, what a blast. And now we're going to, like, dig into a little bit of sports. But before we do, like, can you, I mean, look, I'm an avid listener of your show. And, like, one thing that I've said it on our show, and I've written about it on, like, social media, is, like, the community of, like, indie podcasters that we've been able to connect with since we started doing this is just so phenomenal. And you guys were kind of, like, the first ones that, like, we kind of tweeted, answered tweets, and then, you know, finally we really connected, you know, to record together, which was great. So I just love your show, and, I mean, I can't wait for every episode to come out, and, like, I feel like it's so different than everything else that I consume podcast-wise, which is great. It's really unique. So, like, maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about what your show's all about.
First off, thanks for the kind words. We're actually feeling kind of humbled looking at each other, well, like, guiltily.
So I man the Twitter. So I'm Phil. This is Phil's voice. Yeah. And I man our Twitter account. So it's kind of funny how this all came about. So, you know, I think we're both, or I was at least very active on the hashtag Podern Family account in the very beginning to try to, you know, tap into this indie podcast network. But then I wanted to find Canadian podcasts to connect with. And you were like, if you weren't the first, you were like the second one that I found on Twitter. So I actually found your show on Twitter. And then, you know, subscribed, started listening to it and was like, wow, these guys are from Montreal and Toronto. So first of all, we're from Ottawa, or we record not far from Ottawa. So it's kind of like right in between. And I love the way that you approach sports conversationally. You know, it's not all about the scores. It's not all about the stats. It's about, you know, I think you guys have said it, and we said it on our side of this conversation, but it's about how sports affects you. And I really was drawn to that. So I started retweeting and connecting with you guys. So it's great to finally come on and speak voices instead of, you know, 140 characters.
Instead of shouting at our earbuds when we're listening to their show.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, come on, talk about this. No, I like echo Phil's sentiments there. As soon as he sent me the first link, he's like, oh, check these guys out. They're Canadian. They're doing a sports show. And I listened to it. And for me, like, I'm an avid podcast listener. I've listened to podcasts for like 9 years or something. Like, I go way back. And I was looking for a general sports conversational show that wasn't so like insanely stat driven. I know you've had that NFL guy who was like talking about the minutia of contracts on there.
Oh, man. Holy and
that was
moly.
That was Neil. Yeah, that was Neil.
Yeah, and that was great. Like I'm like, oh wow, because I can, I don't know, I like that sort of engagement at sometimes, but I actually just like your guys' banter and how it's almost like having two buddies who know way more about sports but aren't jerks about it, basically.
Yeah, you guys aren't jerks. Cool. Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
No, it's interesting you say that, though, because, well, our show is basically, it's just a phone conversation that we record. I mean, Skip and I would talk to each other even if we didn't have the show, and we'd pretty much say exactly the same thing. But I must confess, I do consider myself a bit of a sports snob, because at work, anytime anyone is talking about sports, I don't really get involved in the conversation because I feel like I know way more about sports than anyone else. And I don't want to talk about it with them because they're just not going to understand it at the level that I understand it. And I'm not necessarily right. Like, they might know more about me, but I just feel like I'm always the smartest person in the room when it comes to sports.
Except when you're with me, right?
Except when I'm with you, yeah.
So I have a similar feeling about when people start talking about school or like research or sociology or anthropology. I just stay out of it because I think like they don't know what they're talking about. And then I save what I'm going to say, and I say it to Matt. And Matt just nods, and he's like already there, like, yep, of course.
That's so funny that you say sports snob as well. I literally wrote that down just before you said it. I'm like, you guys are not sports snobs. At least that's not how it comes across on the podcast. I mean, like, or is it that I'm a sports snob and that I just found two guys who are like me?
We also both have degrees from Harvard. I have one. He has two. What a snob.
So I think we got off on a tangent. Do you actually ever describe your show?
No. So our show.
Welcome to our show. This is our show.
Our show, Semi-Intellectual Musings, we're a weekly podcast that takes social sciences, humanities, and arts, and we use those lenses to look at a variety of topics. So we've looked at literature, books, movies, cooking. So really, we like to approach the world around us through the social science, humanities, and arts lenses, and we want our listeners to feel like we're in a pub just having a conversation.
Yeah, totally. Where notebooks are kind of optional, and honestly, we try not to take ourselves too seriously. But something I've been thinking about the last little while is that when it comes to the research and the content for our show, that is taken pretty seriously. Like, we put a lot of work in preparing for the show, but then we hope that it comes across in like an approachable manner on the actual show itself.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, one thing is clear when you do listen to your show is there is a lot of pre-work that goes involved. That's involved. Like, me and Josh don't even approach that. Actually, we usually do no pre-work, but or very little. But I mean, the amount of research that goes into each and every one of your episodes is there definitely noticeable. I mean, you know, you start going through the history of whatever topic, right? So it's clear that like there's some work involved there.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. And it's funny, this coming on your show is a nice break for us because I just have like a blank sheet in front of me with four potential topics and we're just going to have at it. So this is actually a nice break for Phil and I.
So, I mean, there's one story or storyline, I guess, that's been, you know, out, that's been in the news, like, basically this whole year, this whole football season. And it started last year. And, I mean, it's this whole take a knee, Colin Kaepernick, standing for the anthem stuff. And, I mean, Phil mentioned it on one of your episodes that he really liked our intro to when this kind of exploded a few weeks ago or maybe a month ago. Like, me and Josh kind of decided like we weren't really going to talk about it. And I know it sounds weird because every sports talk show in the world or in North America is talking about, you know, the NFL and the players not standing for the anthem. And me and Josh basically said, no, we're not going to do that because, you know, we want to talk about sports. We want to talk about stuff we like to talk about. We want to talk about what's interesting to us. We want to talk about, you know, what, something a little bit more positive, I hate to say it, but like, and then when you guys approached us to like, hey, you want to do a crossover? You want to do a, I mean, it seemed like the natural topic of this whole anthem business was like sports and politics intersecting is where, you know, it seemed like the natural kind of starting point for our two shows to kind of have a little conversation, right?
Yeah, what I really, so I'm just going to kind of continue with what you were saying there, but what I really loved about that intro to that episode, and I don't remember exactly which episode it was now, but you said, you know, yes, there are politics in sports. Yes, it's there, but let's focus on the personal experience with sport first. And yeah, sometimes, you know, you just need a distraction. So let's view sports as that distraction. And what I really liked about that is that that is one part of sport. One part of sport is that it's a distraction from your everyday kind of, I'm going to just call it like BS that goes on, right? And you said something like, you know, you get home after a long day work, you don't want to think about money, you don't want to think about your work problems, you don't want to think about all the things that you should be doing. You just want to relax and watch a bunch of guys skate around or run around a field, right?
Right.
Yeah, so like,
I mean,
go ahead. Sorry. No, you go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go.
Oh, God. See, Canadian,
like,
standoff.
Honestly, like, for me, like, I kind of disagreed a bit with you guys, actually, if that's okay.
That's okay.
Thank you. I, like, when I'm watching sports, I can't help but seeing the social and political dimensions of it. We might talk about concussions later, but like, I can't watch UFC or boxing anymore. I can't really watch NFL. And like, I have a hard time hearing people talk about the NFL when they don't like acknowledge some of the political and social dimensions of it. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but it just sort of like, I have a hard time separating sports and politics.
I mean, look, I have a lot of opinions. Like, what we didn't, you basically went through our whole lives on the first part of this episode. But what you don't know about me is that I actually have a BA in poli-sci. So, So I do like to talk about politics. I am involved in politics. I have opinions, but like, I kind of muted them, to, you know, on my show. But like, you, like, we can definitely get into it right now, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll just say right off the top, like, I, as somebody who creates a show as well, with Phil here, I can respect that as well. Like, knowing what your audience is looking for and being able to separate your political views from your show if that's the direction you want to go. So I actually respect that. So, yeah.
So where do you want to start with Kaepernick? I mean, can I tell you something from a sports perspective? I love Kaepernick. He was one of my favorite players in the league. I'm a huge 49ers fan.
Me too.
And like, I thought he got like a raw deal. And like, basically, they, before all the kneeling stuff, like, they didn't use him properly. Like, from a pure sports angle, they didn't use him properly. His team sucked. He started to look bad as a quarterback. And next thing you know, he's out of the league.
And he was one complete pass away from winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he was one pass away from winning the Super Bowl. And now he's not in the NFL. And, like, my God, I don't even want to, like, it's disgusting when you see some of the quarterbacks that are going to play this Sunday.
And it's coming funny, Sunday. Like, playing for the 49ers with the legacy of quarterbacks that they've had, it's almost like that's quite a big standard to live up to, right? So it's almost like he was setting up to fail. And and I agree with not using him correctly. The NFL has always had a problem with that, unlike our league up here in the CFL, where you have much more mobile quarterbacks. Down in the NFL, they still have this old school idea that they have to sit in the pocket and they have to sort of look down their options down the field and stuff. So
you are 100% right, and I've said it several times on our show that whenever a mobile quarterback comes, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do with these guys. The offensive coordinators are like, oh, well, he's not a dropback passer. Like, he won't fit into our offense. Well, like, how about fitting your offense around him? You know, like,
and totally. That thought never occurs. Height as well. Like, they're not tall enough to be a quarterback in the NFL. But I mean, that's why we have so many exciting quarterbacks up here in the CFL, right?
Yeah, that's right. We got all the very, very talented players that just don't have the height or physical requirements sometimes.
So I have some quotes about things that have been said about Colin Kaep.
Yeah, sure.
So he's not 100% committed. He's more concerned with activism. He's a distraction. He will only sign with the team if he starts. He wants too much money. Or even, I am concerned about his conditioning now that he is a vegetarian.
Wow, some major stuff there, right? But the thing about only signing a team if he was going to start, that might be true. I don't know, that might be true. We don't know what went on, but I mean, we do know that he wasn't signed by anybody, and quarterbacks in the league are dropping like flies, and he's still not signed by anybody, so it's a bit weird, right?
Yeah, it's weird that he hasn't got a chance in Green Bay, right?
Yeah,
Kaepernick and his lawyer are suing the league for collusion. And then just yesterday, the league has asked three different owners to hand over their cell phone records and email records to see if there has been any communication regarding Kaepernick and not signing him. So, I mean, I don't know if anything's going to come from this investigation, but I mean, to the naked eye, it does appear that, yes, there is collusion, because other quarterbacks have been signed with all these injuries that are not as good as Colin Kaepernick. But to prove that in a court of law, I don't know that someone could do that.
From what I've read, I think proving collusion is really difficult. And I think as long as, even if they did collude, which I do think they did, not all 30 owners, but I think there was some kind of maybe unwritten, unspoken collusion at very least, like people kind of agreed to, like, we're just not going to sign him. But like, I don't know how you can prove it, you know, like you said, they're going to try to get phone records. I don't know if they'll find anything, but
you know, at the end of the day, I guess the big question that I have anyway is, are professional sports teams like the NFL obligated to hire people who are available to play? I mean, like, if I walked up there and said, you know, I can be a great safety, and I you know, showed stats and I could play as a great safety, but no one hired me, would I be able to sue them for not hiring me?
Yeah, because you're Canadian, they don't think you're a good enough football player or something like that.
Right, yeah. Like, I'm used to playing with big balls, and, you know, now I got to go to the NFL.
See, what I find interesting about this collusion thing, I'm happy you brought this up, because that's the word that keeps popping into my head about Colin Kaepernick, is that they're colluding to keep him out of the league. And effective collusion is always a handshake thing, right? If you leave a paper trail, then you're doing something wrong, right? And what's interesting about seeing collusion in professional sports is you can actually quantifiably prove that Colin Kaepernick is a better quarterback than some white boy from Mississippi or whatever they got playing on some random team. You can actually compare their stats and say, at least there's a strong indication that this guy has more potential to be a more effective player for us, more effective asset, because that's honestly how they're looked at, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I went through the beginning of the year. Remember, Josh, like the list of really terrible quarterbacks that were starting on week one, and there was a lot of them, and it's only gotten worse, right? Like just this week, Deshaun Watson of the Houston Texans is out for the season, and like Kaepernick's a perfect fit for that team, perfect fit. Yet I've heard that this stiff Tom Savage is going to start this week, and like they already know he sucks. They tried him. They know. Right? The team knows. And I don't know. Like, I hate to beat a dead horse, but like, I don't know. Like, I just don't think he's going to get signed by anyone. And I think that's just the way it is, you know?
You guys brought up a great point about 90 seconds ago when you said, is there an obligation for the NFL or any NFL team to sign him? And there isn't. It is a private organization. I mean, for example, if IBM, I'm just picking a company out of the top of my head, wanted to hire the best, I don't know, computer engineers, and there's a long list of computer engineers. There could be the best computer engineer on the planet, but for some reason, IBM doesn't want to hire that person. They don't have to. They're not obligated to. I don't think it's illegal.
And it's It's also interesting that you can't take a one-off, like when you go to a court of law and you're trying to prove like an affirmative action case, essentially, like what you're describing there, like say they didn't pick people of color who are just as qualified to be engineers. Those, like the paper trail you need to prove that goes back like almost like decades, just to prove that very obvious sort of form of collusion. Right. So yeah, I see your point there for sure.
You know, Phil, you mentioned, he's a distraction. This is one of the buzzwords that's going around, right?
Yeah.
But what do you guys think about this? Like, don't you think that, the president tweeting that players should be fired is a distraction?
Absolutely.
Well, how about owners of the teams coming out and saying, one owner saying,
we're not going to let the inmates run the prison.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, that was the owner of the Texans, right? That was the owner of the Texans that said, we're not going to let the inmates run the prison. And Jerry Jones of the 49ers said, anybody who kneels is not going to play.
Right.
Right. 2 weeks after he kneeled, right? Which is, you know, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so like, don't you think that these are distractions? Like, the distractions are already there, right? Like, it's not going to change, right? So I think the whole, like, hashtag distraction is, like, complete. It's just an excuse, really.
Yeah, and I find it really funny that, you know, I kind of opened with describing your show as wanting to use sports as distraction. So like, what are mm-hmm. we distract? Like, so now there's a distraction of the distraction. Like the distraction isn't good enough. So, you know,
semiotically speaking, of course.
So it's not about how good Kaepernick is, because we know he can play amongst some of the best quarterbacks, or, you know, some of the, at least the middle tier quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's like top 15, yeah. top 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it becomes something else, right? And it becomes something that's racialized, or something that's wanting to be anti-political, or something about maybe his politics. So I think, you know, proving collusion on that front is more about just proving how biased the NFL is. But we don't need Kaepernick to know that. They keep hiring players and re-signing their contracts of players who have been found guilty of abuse at home, like, you know, beating their wives and stuff. So, like, we know that the NFL is biased. We know that they have their own kind of agenda.
Yeah, then they privilege certain types of crimes, basically. Like, if you beat a woman, apparently, you could still play in the league. And it's interesting, when they talk about distractions, it's almost like, if they keep talking about the distraction, all you can notice is the distraction, right? So, like, maybe this could all just sort of be settled if somebody just gave him a freaking job, right? And if people, like, honestly don't care if athletes are kneeling, then, like, stop talking about it, like, and just move on. But when you keep hyper-focusing on it and calling it a distraction, that's all people can focus on.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys remember, a few years ago, there was a player in NCAA college football. His name is Michael Sam, who came out and said he was gay. And there was questions around whether any NFL team would draft him, because they didn't want the distraction of having him around and having reporters around and asking a million questions that had nothing to do with football. In the end, he did get drafted. And I don't think he actually ever played a game in the NFL. And then he, I think, played one game in the CFL. And as it turned out, I don't think he was good enough to play. And that's the reason he doesn't play anymore. But I mean, there's another example of a distraction. So NFL teams, they want to make sure that there are no outside distractions so they can focus on football literally 24/7. I mean, if you ever met a football coach or a football general manager, it's all they think about 24/7. They don't have a life. Some of them sleep at the stadium. But I'm not saying that this excuses their behavior
by
any means, but it's just, there's another example of how, you know, we don't want this guy on the team because it's going to be a distraction.
And when Michael Sam was being sort of scouted and like rumored that he was going to go in the first round, I remember the narrative around him was that his teammates all accepted him and the coaching staff all accepted him. And he's actually a really good leader almost because of his homosexuality. And it's like, they had to almost like justify that this guy was capable despite being gay, so that teams in the NFL would even consider having him on there. And then as soon as the teams were approached for comment, like, will you draft this guy? They're like, ooh, I don't know if our fan base is going to really be okay with this. So they'd displace like the blame onto their fans and calling their fans a bunch of homophobes. And it's like, no, just draft this guy and let's move on and see if he can play. Like, I don't know. It strikes me as weird. I don't know.
You use the key word there, like fan base, right? So that's kind of like getting onto this like big elephant in the room, or elephant in the, I don't know, we're not in the same room, so I guess there can't be really an elephant in the room. But like this thing that we haven't talked about yet, which is like Kaepernick's message, which is completely being misconstrued, because I think the big portion of the fan base of the NFL just doesn't care. And then, and they're just gobbling up what's being fed to them. You know, like, I wish someone could just take some of these fans and shake them and say, do you understand that they're not kneeling because they're protesting the anthem? They're protesting a cause, right? Yeah. It's not the anthem that they're protesting. Like, it's so frustrating. Every time I see the word anthem and protest together, it's so frustrating. And yeah. Phil, you know, you brought it up in like your little rundown, like, I started following Colin Kaepernick on social media before he was a starter for the 49ers, but when he was when he was the backup, right? Because I'm a big fan of that team. I knew who this guy was since day one, right? And he has been involved in social causes since the first day he walked into the National Football League.
Oh, seriously? I had no idea.
Since before anybody knew who the hell this guy was. He works with kids every week. He has camps with kids, summer camps. He, right now, his causes are racially influence. He goes into black communities to try to teach kids about, you know, their rights and you know, like, basically, like, mentoring them. But, like, that's what he's about. That's what he's always been about. Nothing's changed. He's just brought his message to a bigger audience. You know, now that he became more famous and more known, he wanted to get his message out there, you know, and now he's being penalized for it, which kind of sucks.
He sounds like, honestly, it just popped in my head, but he sounds like an educator. Like, what a lot of his stuff does is, like, educating the masses on, and it's interesting, like, this is tied to, it's deeply rooted in the NFL, but basically there is a stereotype and a prejudice against African-American quarterbacks because the assumption is that African-Americans aren't intelligent enough to play the position. It's something that I would talk about in my tutorial groups a little bit, and this is one of the reasons why Warren Moon ended up in the CFL, and he played for 6 seasons, I believe, with the Eskimos and won 5 Grey Cups, which is crazy. That's right. And a lot of the rumblings and maybe occasional comments in the media would hint at the assumption that African-Americans aren't intelligent enough to play the position. So I think there's this subtlety with Kaepernick because he challenges that perception because he's brilliant, right? And he's an educator.
He's a very smart guy.
Yeah. And he's political. Yeah. But those things come first. The smarts come before the politics, right?
It's funny because this whole thing about, like, you know, like the most famous quote ever about, like, you guys remember this quarterback, Doug Williams? He was a quarterback for the Redskins 1 year when they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, totally. I do.
So he was the first black starting quarterback to ever win the Super Bowl. It was the 80s. And then, you know, of course, you get like the scrum of media in the press conferences before the Super Bowl, and you get reporters that are not following. You know, the most classic quote ever is, you know, a reporter holds up his mic to Doug Williams. He's like, "What's it like being a black quarterback in the NFL?" And he's like, "Well, I've always been a black quarterback." You know, like, what he's saying, like, you know, like, that's just like the all-time classic. As much as the black quarterbacks have kind of established themselves in the league, like, there's been so many now that it shouldn't be a big deal, it still kind of is, right? I mean,
And these assumptions, they take a long time to change, like culture or social organization. That takes a long time to change. You can't just sort of like overnight it, unfortunately. It's going to persist for a while. And usually, and this is the last point on this little thing, but usually African-American professional athletes are praised for their physicality, right? So when you think about Michael Vick, he revolutionized the quarterback position because he was just like a physical specimen. Right. And so they get praise for the physicality, but their intelligence is underplayed. And I just wanted to sort of throw that out there because I think it's an important point.
It's 100%. It's 100% true.
One of the most hypocritical things is every college football player, before they enter the NFL, they go through what the NFL calls a combine, where they put them through the ringer. They make them run. They make them jump. They make them do all these drills, you know, so they can test them on their speed and their agility and everything like that. One of the things they do at this combine is they give them a written test. And I'm not even sure why they give them the written test, because a lot of the players, whatever position you're talking about, a lot of the players don't do well on this written test, but they still get drafted in the first round. So I'm not even sure why they give them this written test. It's so hypocritical.
Right. That's the Wunderlich, right? The Wunderlich test is called. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And like the visual of seeing like a lot of African American athletes going through a combine with a bunch of white owners of the teams kind of judging them off on the side. There's some symbolism there that is pretty disturbing if you think about it. So.
Agreed.
Yeah. I just want to bring up a couple events in history that are somewhat similar to what we see going on with Kaepernick. And two of them in particular that I want to draw attention to revolve around the events of Ferguson. So Trayvon Martin shooting. So the St. Louis Rams around 2012 walked out onto the field in a game before the Oakland Raiders. And they put up their hands. So they raised their hands during the anthem. And no one kind of got in trouble for that. But that's the NFL. But going to the NBA, also in protest to the Trayvon Martin shooting, was the Miami Heat, who put on their hoodies and stood with their hands in their pockets during the anthem.
Right.
LeBron James, who was a member of the Heat during that time, tweeted a picture of the Miami players doing that. And yet, like, we don't see the sort of fallout that we've seen with Kaepernick around these sorts of...
Part of the reason why is this whole Kaepernick thing, I mean, I don't know if it was week 4 or 5, whatever it was quieting down. Like you could see every week there were less and less players that were protesting.
Yeah.
And then it only blew up because the president of the United States opened his big mouth and said something, and then it became a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of got so a little
now,
mouth, but
what,
yeah.
Everything that anyone is talking about now, it's not even about Kaepernick anymore. It's something completely different. And so, but everyone still uses Kaepernick's name because he was the one who was the first one to do it and whatever. But the reason that players are standing and protesting now is not even the same reason that Kaepernick stood and protested. It's completely different.
But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the president, Josh, because you were asking, Phil, like, why in 2012 and in 2000, like, was it okay to, like, kind of protest? And now it's not. And it's because it's the United States is not the same in 2012 as it is now because of who's in charge, right? And the person in charge has kind of brought a lot of maybe people out of the woodwork who were a little bit not going to say how they really feel about things. And now they're like, no, if he thinks that's okay, then I'm okay to say it also, right?
Yeah, and like we can think back like even further in history to like the late 60s, early 70s with Ali, Muhammad Ali, who
I wrote that down also. I was going to bring that up.
Oh, well, okay. Well, we're thinking alike already. but yeah, like you know, so he refused to be drafted. You know, convicted of draft evasion. He was sentenced. I think he was fined. Yet he continued his sport career and his politics grew stronger because of it almost. Like, so being penalized by the state allowed Ali to have even a bigger platform. But we don't necessarily see that with Kaepernick. Like, you know, he's being penalized by the NFL. And I feel like, yes, there's attention being drawn to it, but it's not Kaepernick's voice. It's voices of people like Dave Zirin. It's voices of people like Trump. It's everyone else is talking for and on behalf of Kaepernick.
Yeah. But you know what? I wonder if this is going to look different in 10, 20, maybe 50 years from now.
Yeah.
And we're going to look back at this in a completely different way. And I know this is like a huge stretch, right? This is like, sorry if it's like totally weird, but like.
No, go for it.
Think back to like the beginning of the civil rights movement, right?
Right.
Yeah, Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks sat on that bus and said, I'm not going to give up my seat for a white man. And I don't know what was said at the time. I wasn't alive and, you know, whatever. But, you know, you can imagine newspapers in the South basically tearing her apart, right? Like, who are these people? Like, it was, you can imagine that, like, she was portrayed as the villain. And now, of course, she's a hero. And I think that eventually, Kaepernick is going to be seen that way.
Yeah, totally.
And he's going to be identified. There's a chance that he could be identified as the start of a huge movement, you know, but for just not seeing it yet. We don't see it yet, you know, and like we're not there yet. Yeah.
So it's interesting. Like, so Ali in the 60s and into the 70s, he would organize these forums with other African-American athletes, big names, and talk about ways to organize themselves and strategize about ways to like engage with the media. So I think that is the thing that's missing with Colin Kaepernick. He's trying to establish that, but everybody's so afraid. And that kind of connects, like we were talking about the NBA. Why is it different in the NBA? I think the thing like people don't talk about much is that in the NFL, there is no guaranteed contracts. Like you can essentially be cut at any time. So like they are heavily disincentivized to speak out because you can just sort of say, oh, you tweaked your knee or something in practice, it's so long to your contract, right? But in the NBA, it's more like hockey where you have guaranteed contracts. And also like culturally in the NBA, the players seem to drive that league a lot more, right? They're a lot more marketable than NFLers with helmets on or hockey players with helmets on.
Well, that's why you get a guy like LeBron James, who's basically like one of the most powerful athletes in the world when it comes to like a social voice. Like if he says something, people listen, right? Yeah.
And in the world too, because the NBA
in the world
one of the only North American sports leagues that's truly international.
You know, he's not afraid to tweet that the president is a moron or whatever he wrote. I forget exactly the words. He's not afraid to tweet about whatever he thinks is just, right? But I think you're right. It needs to maybe go a step further and like get a little organized, right? Maybe.
I think so. I think that's the missing component. That's why, as Phil says, you're not hearing from Colin Kaepernick himself. There's other people sort of almost speaking on behalf of him. And you don't want that because then your political message gets distorted. Yeah.
Right.
The Skip and Josh podcast is back.
So, okay, completely shifting gears. We were talking a little bit before we hit record. One of you has a kid who plays in youth sports. It's something that I have a four-month-old, Violet. She's going to be the first Major League Baseball player. I'm just letting you know now. She'll play third base.
Is she going to play for the Jays?
Yes, she is. Actually, you know, funny thing about Violet, like I wear my Blue Jays hat all the time because of all my concussions, basically. But she associates the top of my head with the Blue Jays logo. So when I take off my hat, she looks at me like puzzled. And then when I put it back on, she's like, oh, the top of Dad's head went back.
Oh my god, so
can we talk about some of the politics of youth sports, some of the experiences you guys have had, get into that a little bit?
Sure, I'd love to. I mean, look, my kids are older than yours. You have a newborn. My son's 16, my daughter's 14. So I've lived through, from my son played hockey from the time he was 5 to the time he was 15. He just stopped playing this year. He decided that was it for him in hockey. He's doing something else now. But, and my daughter has done organized sports, but, you know, unfortunately, you're not going to be so happy with me, Matt, but, you know, she did what I would call, she's drawn to the more girly sports, you know? So she did, you know, it's sad, but you know, she never wanted to play soccer or there's plenty of girls playing soccer, you know, she never wanted to play soccer or baseball, or there's tons of girls playing hockey. She didn't want to do that. So she did gymnastics and she did cheer. And now she just does dance, which is, believe it or not, a sport.
Yeah. But, oh, for sure. I totally see those as legitimate pursuits for sure. Yeah. And I don't agree. Obviously they're girlier, right? Figure skating.
Yeah. Well,
whatever.
I mean, she was drawn to that because the femininity of it, you know?
Yeah,
they're still sports, but they're very artistic in a way, and there's makeup and there's costumes. So she's drawn to that too. But you know, my son played minor hockey here in the West Island of Quebec, you know, for his whole life. And I had tons of stories. I mean, there's so much politics within the organizations, the parents. And I was very heavily involved with all his teams. I was never a coach, but I was a team manager for a lot of years. And I could tell you that I helped the coaches pick the teams because, you know, I knew all the players just as much as them. And we used to pick based on the parents. You know, we don't want that kid because we don't want that parent
seriously?
On our team.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh, so it wasn't the fact that I couldn't skate forward that I didn't make the hockey team?
This is not double letter hockey. This is single letter hockey. So, I mean, he did play double letter hockey for a time. And then eventually, he was always the smallest kid. So it was tough on him because he was little. So he ended up in the single letters, which is, there's no more house league anymore here in Quebec, right? Because all the cities have so many kids playing that there's a organized single letter, our town has single letter teams versus all the towns next door. And, you know, there's a league of single letter hockey. So, I mean, we used to pick the players and say, yeah, that kid's really good, but I don't know. I can't deal with that dad for a whole season, or I can't deal with that mom for a whole season. And that was a definite consideration when picking players.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When I played minor hockey, and I was a house player, legit house player. And but in my hometown of Surrey, we only had two ice surfaces, right? Actually, three in total. So there was a 3-year waiting list to play house hockey. wow. So I started my first year of hockey, I was 13, and so I was developmentally in a hockey sense, I was not making the rep team, right?
Right.
But I think just what you said, with it's about the parents. I think also it's a class issue as well, a socioeconomic issue, because there was a lot of guys that I would play with who were the best player on our team. They could easily be a legit rep player, AAA kind of player. But their family just simply couldn't afford all the travel and all the equipment and the additional camps that you have to go to and stuff. So I wonder if we can talk about sort of the socioeconomic stuff in organized youth sports a bit.
Well, hockey definitely here in this province, and I'm sure it's the same in Ontario, it's big business, right? Even at the youth level. So it's a 12-month sport.
Yeah,
you play all year, right? Which is sad, right? I remember when I was a kid, I you know, you do one sport, you do another sport. But now, if you want to play hockey, you got to play all year round. You can't do anything else, right?
Yeah.
If you want to be good at hockey, you got to do it all year. And you got to play during the year. And then you got to play for a spring league team. And then you got to do summer hockey. And then you got to go back in the fall and start your season over for your town. And it's a grind, you know, honestly, it's a grind. And I was sure that my son was going to tell me when he hit peewee age that he didn't want to play hockey anymore. Not that. And he was a damn good player, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But I could see that it wasn't as much fun anymore.
Yeah, he's burning out, right?
And I told him at one point, I was like, I told him when he was little, when he was in, after he finished Adam hockey, his last year of Adam hockey. And I said, you know, Matthew, if you don't want to play hockey next year, you don't have to play hockey. And he looked at me like puzzled, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just saying, like, just because you've played hockey every year doesn't mean that next year it has to continue. If you want to do another sport, if we want to go skiing, if you want to play basketball, if you want to, like, if you want to do swimming, if anything, you want to do something else, you can do it. You don't automatically have to say, I'm graduating to the next level of hockey just because that's the way it goes. And he was like, oh, I understand, but I want to play hockey next year. And he did. And he did play for 2 more years after that. And then, actually for 4 more years after that, sorry. And then just last year, he was like, okay, Matthew, I'm going to sign you up for hockey this year. He's about to start midget level. And he's like, you know what? I think I'm done with hockey. And I was like, I was cool with it, you know, honestly.
Yeah, totally.
I was cool with it. My wife, who wasn't as into it. I mean, I'm the one that always took him all the time, went to all the games. And unfortunately, when you have two kids, you tend to, like, one parent goes with one and one goes with the other.
Yeah, so totally.
She tended to go to my daughter, driving my daughter everywhere she had to go. And I would drive him everywhere he had to go. That's just a sad reality. But she was like, oh my God, he's not going to play hockey this year. She was so sad. And I was like, why are you so sad about it? She goes, it's such a big part of his life. I'm like, yeah, you know, but he'll find something else, you know?
So one sort of like parting tip that I had that I heard a lot of professional athletes talk about, none of them played just one sport. If you want your kid to move ahead in any one particular sport, get them to play a multitude of sports. This isolating on one sport and playing it 12 months a year is not going to amount to anything. So
I read that too, but there's so much pressure on the kids in hockey when it comes to tryout season, which is like August, September. And it's like, there's a lot of pressure on them. I used to feel so bad for my son when he would go through tryouts. And you go through the tryout and then you wait after the practice, you wait in the room, and then they call your name and then they tell you if you made it to the next, then if they call you outside the dressing room and they tell you like if you made it to the next level or if like the next round of cuts or if that was it, right? And man, there was a lot of pressure on them, you know? It's unbelievable.
So I was a double letters player and I was a goalie growing up.
Wow.
And
it's so cool. Eh?
So what you're saying, like, you know, being called in or out of the dressing room, if you're going to make it or not, is bringing back so many memories. So they do it. So they mess with your head. Like you're 8, 9, 10, 12,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And they totally I'm going to swear here. They totally f with you. So I remember sitting in there. So like after, you know, 4 weeks of showing them your skills and you're playing some pickup games and you're competing against, in my case, like I think we were 8 or 9 goalies competing for four spots. And, you know, you're sitting around in the room and they always put all the goalies together, right? So that you can look at your enemy, like right in the eye.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And then, and then they'll say, okay, everyone wait here after you're done getting changed and we're going to call your name. But you don't know if you leave the room, if you're being picked or not. Right. And you're not supposed to, and you can't go back to talk to the other ones to tell them like, oh, if they call your name, like you're cut. So sometimes it would be, they call your name out of the room, you're cut. So basically like handshake, goodbye, you're gone. Or sometimes they call you out of the room and send you to another room. And then someone else would say, okay, you made it to the next level.
Like a holding cell.
It was the craziest experience of my life. But what I retained the most from that is, so I made it a couple times and then I got cut. And the last time I got cut, I walked out and one of the other parents said, well, what do you mean they cut you? Like your stats and your performance have been just spectacular. Like there's no, like hands down, you should have been picked. And then I will always remember another parent said it's the politics behind it. He doesn't have parents who can drive him to the games. So so they thought, well, you know, if we take him on, is he going to be able to make it to all the games? And I went like,
or is he going to be a burden to the team?
Exactly. A distraction, right?
Yeah, a distraction to the team. Yeah,
I've seen many cases like that, where even worse situations where it's like, you didn't make it. One kid made it because his dad's going to be one of the coaches. Well,
yeah.
Shouldn't they decide the coaches after they make the team? Right? Like, I never got that.
Yeah.
I can honestly remember the first and last name of like at least 5 guys who were in the exact same situation as Phil, whether it was a socioeconomic thing or a family situation where they didn't make the team because they just weren't able to get there.
Yeah. Well, look, so Matt, like, what are you going to get Violet into baseball?
Well, I'm going to, there's interesting stuff going on in female baseball right now. So this is maybe the thing I'll leave you guys with. But I know Time, I believe, has done an article on it. And there was the Women's World Series that just happened over in the summer. It's an international women's baseball tournament. So one of the politics of baseball and gender is that a lot of girls are funneled into softball. And it's a completely different sport. And I think there's no reason why women can't play professional baseball, if not make the major leagues as well. So, like, honestly, I'm just going to indoctrinate her with the Blue Jays, unfortunately. Hopefully it just sort of sticks. I already got the top of the head thing working, so we're getting there.
Josh, did you watch that TV show on Fox? What was it called?
It was called Pitch. Yes. Pitch. Actually, it was a great show. It only lasted one season. Yeah, it was, yeah. I was upset that they canceled it, but it was about a female who makes the team, and she's a pitcher, and yeah. It was very well done, actually. Yeah. I'm
Zach Morris was
that,
the catcher, you know?
Who was, sorry?
Zach Morris.
Is that what his name was? I forget.
Oh, no, the kid from Saved by the Bell? He was the catcher?
Yeah, totally. They just threw a beard on him.
I forget his name, so I'll take your word for it.
Mark Paul Glosser.
But, just to finish up on your daughter, if she's ever able to hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and then she'll make the majors.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking utility infielder because I was always a terrible hitter. Nobody ever taught me how. Okay. But I'm trying to make her ambidextrous right now. That's my first strategy.
Switch hitter. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, like when my son was like 2 years old, he carried around like this plastic baseball bat everywhere he went, right? Everywhere he went, he had this bat in his hand. And then I remember still with like going in my backyard with Josh and pitching him like a ball underhand with this bat. And Josh is like, no, we got to make him into a left-handed batter. So,
that's
like,
awesome.
We taught him how to bat left-handed right from the start,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, I know that. Even though you're closer to first base, there's less of you out there. Yeah, no, I'm on board with that as well.
But actually, what they do find in the province of Quebec and in Ontario, there is, well, I mean, this goes for a few things. Like, golf is obviously much more popular. And I know, Matt, you're a big golfer, right?
Yeah, totally.
So, there is a much higher percentage of left-handed golfers in Quebec and Ontario as opposed to everywhere else in the world, and it's because of hockey.
Dude, I totally knew that. I used to use that line to sell golf clubs at Nevada Bob's back in Surrey. Yeah, it's because of hockey. Yeah.
And the same thing happens with youth kids in baseball, because my son started to play baseball, believe it or not, when he was 15 years old, not having no clue how to play baseball. He's like, sign me up for baseball. So, like, he played baseball these last two summers, and of course he batted left-handed, and there's a lot more left-handed batters than there normally I was used to seeing, and it's mostly because a lot of the kids play hockey and they shoot left, and that's just like the way it goes. Yeah, it's pretty weird, even though, like, they're all righties, like, they write with their right hand and everything. So
yeah, like, Phil golf left-handed.
That's my setup, dude. Yeah. But that's because I was a goalie. So I would catch with my left and then hold my stick with my right. And then, you know, I just adopted that for my golf swing, my baseball swing, and everything else.
Yeah, your top hand is your right hand.
Yeah.
If you look at the back of the old $5 bill, there's a bunch of kids playing hockey on a pond, and I believe all of them are shooting left.
Only you would find that. That is amazing, Josh.
That's
awesome.
Love
that.
I'm looking for a fiver right now.
I don't know if the new five has it. I think it's the old five only.
Yeah, but I know that picture that you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, the hockey sweater thing. Yeah.
So guys, I think we'll probably wrap it up. Maybe we'll have you back. I know there's some other topics that we wanted to delve into.
Oh, trust me, we're coming back on. Yeah. You can't get rid of us now, man.
We're just going to invite ourselves back. Yeah,
now we have your Skype ID.
I know concussions in sports is like a huge thing for you, Matt. So I think maybe we can do a whole episode on that maybe another time, right?
That'd be cool. Yeah, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah,
actually.
So maybe I'm going to ask Phil because I know he's more of the social media guy. Maybe you can tell everybody, you know, how they can reach you, how they can find you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we're on Twitter at @_SIM_POD. We're on Facebook at The SimPod. You can send Matt and or I an email at semiintellectual@gmail.com. Our website, including the archives to the show, is thesim.podbean.com, and we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Radio FM, we're everywhere on the internet under Semi-Intellectual Musings, so you can just search for us, plug us in. And we're starting, well, we've started for a little while now, but we have this kind of neat, it's not a full segment, it's kind of like a half segment called Patio Sessions. So we release those kind of in between our big long-winded research episodes. And those are all on our archives. But we invite people who want just a snippet, kind of like a 15, 20 minute of us talking, a little taste if you want to see what we're about, to check out some of the patio sessions.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the patio sessions. They were cool.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming on. And
that was a blast. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, we had so much fun, guys.
Thanks for joining us on our show.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
All right, so before we sign off, remember, you can listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Skip and Josh podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or, you know, basically the podcast app of your choice. You know, anywhere you find podcasts, you know, just type in Skip and Josh and you'll find us. If you would like to send us an email, we would love to hear from you. skipandjoshshow@gmail.com. Twitter is always great, @SkipandJosh, or you can also like and follow our Facebook page. And as always, everything that I just said, all the links I just mentioned, are on our website, skipandjosh.com.
Awesome. Love it.
All right. Talk to you next time, Josh.
Have a good night.
The Skip and Josh podcast is over now. Don't worry, there'll be another episode soon.